Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guests will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here. In the studio with me today is mother and daughter Kim Zimmerman and her daughter Megan Keller and their brand new book, The Unbroken Spirit. We're going to talk about that today. So welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Welcome back, Kim.
Yeah, welcome back. Yeah.
Megan, this is your first time on the podcast,
right?
My
very first time, yep.
Well, we're honored to have you here.
Thank you.
And before we actually get into the book, and great job on this book, by the way, so needed. Before we get into that, let's talk a bit about you. Kim, tell us a bit about you. Who are you?
Who am I?
Who are you, really?
Yeah, so Brian and I have been in Lititz most of our married life, and we are pastors
in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, United States.
There we go.
We have a house church, and we also are the oversight for a house church network.
Awesome.
And we also have a ministry called City Gate, where we have six locations that are prayer rooms and ministry centers. And
it's an awesome ministry.
Yeah. So just
thank you.
Really serving the Lord.
Yeah, it's awesome. Megan, talk to us about you. You got a young family, right?
I do, yes.
And a husband who's a pilot, I think.
Yeah,
is that
just
right?
Airline. Just start at the airline.
Yeah.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you're a photographer too, I know, aren't you?
I'm a photographer. Yeah. I was a wedding photographer for years and then kind of scaled back with having kids. I have two kids, Owen and Kinsley.
Yep.
Yep. They're 8 and 6. And
awesome.
Just kind of in that whole adorable motherhood role right
I'm
now.
I'm sure grandma says they're adorable. I'm sure they are.
Yeah,
I've met
so
them.
Much.
They are adorable. The Unbroken Spirit, the book that you've written, Navigating Trauma Without Losing Your Passion for God. I love that. Love that title and subtitle. Talk to me, Kim, why did you write the book?
So what happened was we were coming up on the 5-year anniversary of my brother's death, and we were going to a conference, and someone asked me to share basically on this. How did I keep my passion for God in the
sure.
midst of trauma? Mm-hmm. And it really made me pause, because I'm like, wow, did I keep my passion? And you kind of find that out in mm-hmm. this little booklet. It definitely has been a journey, but I really felt like I wanted people to understand what it's like from this perspective of murder, how different that is than, you know, both my parents that were ill and passed away, and that was traumatic, but murder was just a different mm-hmm. language, a different depth of walking through emotions. And like I said in the book, you know, dealing with God's so good, but then my brother's murdered. And how do you reconcile that?
Yeah. Okay, well, you open the book, obviously, with a story of what happened. Tell us the specifics. You know, tell us what happened, the shock. You said in the beginning of the book, you said your life was changed forever.
Yeah.
Explain that.
So you watch all the TV shows, right, on the crime scene and stuff.
Right.
And Megan and I both really like murder mysteries and stuff. But then you're actually living it, and you're like, none of those shows are accurate. None of them make sense. And so when you're dealing with district attorneys and hearing language like second degree murderer and different mm-hmm. things, all of a sudden you're forced into this world that you don't really understand, and you can't think clearly because you're in shock and you're all these emotions. And in the midst of that, we had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that we were feeling and thinking and trying to deal with was on pause because we couldn't deal with any of it
mm-hmm.
for like a 3-year period.
Yeah. So, Megan, you watched your mom walk through this. Obviously, mm-hmm. this is your uncle, too.
Yeah.
Give me your perspective.
So, for me, it was more like secondhand trauma or secondhand mm-hmm. grief. And in my shoes, it was not only like kind of dealing with that loss of my uncle, but I felt like I lost my mom at the same time. And mm-hmm. so that was really, you know, emotional. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, just having to navigate giving her space to grieve and process. And realizing, like, I have to take the back seat and kind of put my needs to the side to show up for her and mm-hmm. her needs right now. And kind of dealing with that question of, when am I going to get my mom back? Am I ever going to get my mom back? Will she ever be the same? It's just lots of mm-hmm. navigating all of that.
Okay, speaking of navigating all that, this book is about navigating trauma.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's some things written about this, but not a lot. And that's why I I like appreciate what you shared so much in this book. What did you learn, Kim, that will help others who are experiencing trauma?
Oh, you know, I'm not a professional. I don't. I'm just going on what people helped me through the process, and then what God was showing me through this whole process. And a lot of it was, for me, it was really actually. I think it was your wife that I was. Just dealing with, like, I didn't know how depressed I was. I was just like a functioning griefaholic because I just didn't know. Mm-hmm. And there was just no language for it. And I think for me, it was learning that whatever I was feeling for that day to just live in that season. Like, if I was sad, I just was sad. If I was happy, I would be happy.
Yeah.
But in the midst of all that, like Meg said, like, I was lost because I couldn't, it was really hard to function. And so I really had to draw on and rely on my relationship with God, and it was really strong before this happened.
Sure.
But it was definitely put through the fire in the midst of this. And I had to rely on people in my life that would tell me, like, I know Megan and my other daughter, Brianna and Brian, both said, you're not okay. Like, you're not okay. So you need to talk to someone. And so then I would be, okay, I got to go talk to someone. But really just navigating it with giving myself time, giving myself, feeling the emotions of it, and like crying or yelling, or like Meg and I had tough conversations.
What I was going to say.
Yeah.
Allowing yourself to be honest.
Yeah. Just like being honest.
Yeah. Just there's a lot of times that you would just tell us like what you needed, or in the moment, just tell us like, I don't want to talk right now, or I can't talk right now. And we had to hold space for you to be able to just do that.
I think is what's tough with all that. You have all the emotion and the grief, and now you're dealing with the district attorney and the court system and the jails. You're dealing with all that at the same time.
Yeah, and you're also a Christian leader trying to help other people at the same time.
Christian leader at the same time trying to help other people. And we had my other daughter, Brianna, was in her wedding, and then the wedding was canceled. So you had the murder, the wedding canceled, all this stuff going on. And I wasn't emotionally there. I just, I couldn't. But I, in the midst of that, I was allowing God to be there in me. It just looked different.
Well, I'm going to share more about this at the end, but for everyone listening today, check out the show notes and this book, The Unbroken Spirit. Pick it up on Amazon or wherever you buy books. Navigating Trauma Without Losing Your Passion for God. Again, I love that title. Kim, how do you reconcile that God is good when your brother, who loved God, was murdered?
Yeah. You know, I think I actually wrote in here, I'm still figuring that one out, because there are days when I'm like, God, I don't get that one. And I know I don't need to understand it. Like, my job is just to trust you, and I do trust you, but I just wish it could have been different. So I think being honest with God was the one thing. Like, you know, David a lot of times was like, God, I'm so irritated with all these people, but yet I will praise you. And that kind of became my thing. Like, God, I don't understand, but yet I'm going to praise you, and I'm going to sit in this space and just be with you, even if I can't pick up my Bible, even if I can't sing a worship song, even if I can't do, you know, even say a prayer right now, I'm just going to sit and be with you because I don't know what else to do. And so it really became trusting God that I don't know. None of us really know what tomorrow is. None of us know anything. But we know that we have a God who is just and will help us through.
So being practical for all of us listening, if maybe we're not experiencing trauma. Some of us definitely are and have been and will in the future. Maybe we're not, but we have people we know who are experiencing trauma. How do we respond to them? And we just don't know what to say. What do you recommend? Yeah.
You know, I think what happens is when you go through this, you do kind of learn a different language. And the first thing that happened to me is, like, probably a month after this happened, someone reached out to me and said, you know, she met with me with coffee, and she had gone through the same thing. Her best friend was murdered, and she said, I'm going to give you language. And that really helped me a lot, just someone meeting with me. As far as, like, friends and stuff, you know, a lot of times we text someone when we hear something like that, and we're like, hey, if you need anything, let me know. But I didn't know.
You don't know what you need.
You don't know.
Even if you think of something in the moment, you're not going to reach out to that person, be like, hey, I could use this right now.
Because then you have the mom guilt. Well, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom technically, so I don't want to bother people that are working. I'll just do it myself. But I really had to allow people, like people showed up and brought us food. People showed up and mowed our grass. Mm. I had a friend who, like, soon right after it happened, and, you know, you have all the stuff you have to get ready because now there's a funeral and there's all this stuff.
Right.
And
right.
And I was just so overwhelmed. And my sweet friend Nancy just came over and, you know, helped. Someone brought a meal, but they brought, like, a rotisserie chicken. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with rotisserie chicken. Mm. What do I do with this? And she helped me. She's, let's do this. And I'm going to drive you to the store to get this. So really just, especially with this type of grief and this type of trauma, having someone that was willing to say, hey, I don't need anything from you, but let me drive you. Mm-hmm. Let me take you to the grocery store. You don't need to be driving right now. So we did have a lot of that in our lives, people just showing up. Hey, let me mow the grass for you. Don't worry about that. And even for ministry, both ministries were involved in there, said, hey, just don't worry about a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't even come in. Don't text us. Don't. Mm-hmm. So it was really just having people. And I think that's one of the things the body of Christ needs to understand. Like, suffering happens.
Mm-hmm.
And people are hurting and they don't know what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so just do something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Show up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just show up. They're not going to ask you, but just show up with a breakfast basket or, hey, I was at the store, I bought an extra this. Just show up for people.
It's good. Talk about how forgiveness and grief can coexist.
That was Megan's line.
So I'm a writer, and part of the way that I process, well, the main way I process things is writing. So I had, my main role in this book was, Mom shared something that I had posted on Facebook, a blog post, I guess you would call it, of just some, the way that me processing through all of this. And something that I was really hit with is that you don't, personally, I felt like I don't need to hold empathy for a person to forgive them. Like, I don't have to be led by my emotions in order to forgive them. So I can make the choice to forgive them.
Correct.
Yeah,
forgiveness is a choice.
Yes, yeah. It's a choice. And and I make that choice that I'm not bound to that person, so that I'm not binding them up. We're both freed. And then, but yet, grief can still coexist.
Yeah.
Even though I'm choosing to forgive them, it doesn't mean that I don't hold even hatred in my heart or bitterness or frustration or grief. Like, those emotions can still exist even though you're choosing to forgive.
And and what happened is she wrote that after, you know, well-meaning people.
Sure.
You know, hey, you just got to forgive this person and move on. And you're like, hello, can you just address that my brother was murdered? And, like, let's not worry about the guy who murdered him right now. Because, like, we always said forgiveness, like, that's a done deal. Like, we know, we forgive and we move on, but there's still consequences. And I'm still hurt. My brother's still gone. And so that was such a powerful statement when she made that. Like, you can still be grief-filled and still not want the situation and still be filled with questions and have forgiveness.
I know choices is a big deal. You mentioned that already. Is there anything else you want to say about choices, Megan, that would be important here?
Yeah, I had been kind of thinking over things and jotting down some notes, and something that came to me was that we can make the right choices while at the same time holding conflicting emotions.
Good.
You don't have to.
So good.
True.
You don't have to let your emotions rule you and make your choices for you. You can make a choice that you know is the right choice, and still have a conflicting emotion.
That's very, very good. Kim, you talked about the three letters in your brother's name, Tom.
Yeah.
And you felt like there's something that God gave you there that represented words that keep your passion for him unbroken. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. And when I was asked to speak this, that's the first thing. I wanted to bring honor to my brother because he really was, he was my older brother, right? You know, I wanted, what he did and what he represented meant a lot. And so I used his name, T-O-M, Tom. And so, like I kind of said, the first thing that I realized that began the healing and helped me through this trauma was giving myself time. And then also learning to be thankful in all things. And, you know, we hear that and then we're like, that's such a Christianese thing to say, you know, be thankful. But yet God really challenged me because I was sitting there after the trial and, you know, sitting in this space and he said, but are you thankful? And I had to really stop and realize it makes me cry. that I was thankful because, like, not for the anything I was going through, but what I went through caused me to lean closer to God, caused me to trust Him. I know that there's not one thing I will go through that He isn't there, that He's always going to be constant. And so I am thankful that no matter what happens in life, I have a God who loves me and will let me just cry and will let me just sit there and not say a word. So I learned about Thanksgiving. And then the O part, like Megan was saying, is the obedience. Like the obedience to forgive. The obedience to do something. And also like ordinary days. Just I started celebrating just every, like that I got out of bed. God, thanks for helping me get out of bed today. It became an ordinary celebration. And just really, like, you know, Megan had a heart-to-heart with me one day that, you know, you're just not there. Your other daughter is a mess. And you're, and it was hard. Like, I had to have a wake-up call that, okay, I need to be obedient to being a mom, being being the person I was, and really helping my daughters. And I remember thinking, I forgot that they lost their uncle and Brian lost his brother. So I had to really think about some of that stuff and started really going into the ordinary things of everyday life that we had to celebrate and remember. And then the M was for the moments and the memories, like that every moment became holy. I think there's a book about that, Every Moment Holy. Just really, I think it, this whole process has made me be more melancholy, if that makes sense. Like, I really ponder things a little bit more. Every memory I just really take in. Like, even when I'm with the grandkids or my kids, I really just take it in and get down to their level and just really, I'm really there in every moment and making the memories. And they're hard because then you have the memories where, like, we would joke how my brother would have the funniest Christmas gifts he would give to the girls. Like, he would work on them all year and they were hysterical. But then you would cry because you had this memory and now he's not there.
Do either of you have anything else to share with our listeners regarding navigating trauma? And I love that word, navigating trauma.
You know, it's an ongoing journey.
Exactly. Ongoing journey is right. Anything else for us personally or anything for us to know so we can help others who are experiencing trauma in their lives? Either of you.
I think something that you had shared in the book, I think it was going along the T for time. And I think you said in the book, like, that it's not true, like time doesn't heal all wounds, you know, that type of sentiment. Like, and then Larry, what you just said, like navigating trauma, it is like just an ongoing thing. There isn't just this arrival point that you get to where all of a sudden your trauma's gone and you're healed and better. Like,
it's part of your life now.
It takes time to get through the bulk of it, like the initial aftermath of like finding your new normal.
It definitely was a 5-year journey that after, like, I remember this past Christmas was 5 years and I was like, I can actually breathe. I don't have anything to deal with in this right now. Like, I can actually breathe and enjoyed my Christmas for the first time in 5 years. But like what Meg said, that was one of my key things, that time does not heal all wounds. Only Jesus heals wounds. Only Jesus can do it. And that was like at the towards the end of the book, I really talk about that, that had I not had a history with Jesus prior to this, I probably would not have survived this because I needed to have His peace and His presence that only He can give, and I wouldn't have been able to ask for it in those moments. It was there because I had genuinely given my life to Him and given my heart to Him prior. And so letting Him heal, come into those spaces. And like I said, it's an ongoing journey. Like, we still cry. There's a song that comes on the radio. Every time it comes on, I just start crying. I just can't. And, you know, it does, you know, the effects, you know, your family's now fractured. Like, there's just a lot of loss because my dad died a year after my brother. So we've had a lot of loss in a very short period of time. And so, like I said, it changes your life forever because the Blackwell family has been fractured. There's a huge loss that you just don't get over. You do learn how to turn, like, I think that's one thing you wrote, you learn how to turn the page, but you're still in the same book. But God's in the book too. And so it's totally relying on Him to help you through all of it.
As I'm just hearing your story, something that's very clear to me is that this whole experience has become a sword in your hand. To help other people. And that's why the book. That's why you've gone on this podcast and people around the world who have gone through trauma are going through trauma. And it's a sword in your hand to help them.
That's our prayer, because even when I shared this at the one conference, I had so many come up and say, you know, they've gone through a very similar, and you're giving words like you're like the being underwater and you can't hear but you can see, and the whole you know, offering forgiveness doesn't mean that you're still not grieving and you can still have emotions and still. Sure. So it is a lot of times in, you know, our Christian world, we think, oh, everything should just be great. And if someone dies, well, we just move on and everything's great. But that's not truth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The unbroken spirit, navigating trauma without losing your passion for God. Anything else you girls have today before we go to the show notes and say goodbye?
I just want to add something quick of, as a, there's a lot of people going through different traumas, and whether you're the secondhand person to that, like, yes, it was hard on me losing my uncle, but I think the secondhand trauma of it was dealing with it as a child, as a daughter, watching her mom go through losing her own brother.
Yes.
And something going along the topic of time and choices is just holding that space as the person that's walking through that trauma with the person that you're close to. So my mom was dealing with, you know, the upfront trauma of it, and I was kind of that secondhand wave of it, helping her navigate that. A way that time and choices kind of play into that is making the choice to give my mom space to grieve when I want to be selfish and say, I need you too.
Yeah.
And that's part of that.
Yeah.
I can have the emotion of feeling selfish and feeling like I need her. She's missing.
Right.
I was missing.
Yeah.
Right.
And even, making the choice to to see what she needs and put that first and still show up for her. And
And it definitely, it was, both my girls were so, they were there for me the whole way through it. And so is Brian. And I wouldn't have gotten through it without them.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. Yeah. Thank you, Megan, for being on the podcast. And please check out the show notes. And I highly recommend this little book. It's filled with truth that will help you and help you help others.
Well,
again, The Unbroken Spirit, Navigating Trauma Without Losing Your Passion for God. So thank you for joining us on the Larry Carter Leadership Podcast today. And there's a lot we can take home. And again, I encourage you to go to Amazon or wherever you buy books and pick this little book up.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Well, sure. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah.
And thanks for being vulnerable and sharing your life to help other people. That's a great blessing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see you next time around on the Larry Carter Leadership Podcast. It's so great to have you today from, I think the last we checked, about 170-plus nations.
Wow.
And we're just blessed for what God's doing throughout the world. And he's using people just like the two of you.
And you.
And all of us together. All of us together to see his kingdom continue to grow. So
amen.
God bless you.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing you again on the podcast real soon.
Thank you for listening to Larry Crider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryCrider.com.